Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing fine. I guess what? I want to talk about, you know, the Middle East again.
Yeah,
talk about what the Turks are up to.
Yeah.
Talk about what Trump is up to. Things have changed. At least the tone has changed dramatically because, you know, as soon as Trump brought the troops out, that was like committing national suicide.
Yeah.
And Republicans, especially the hawk Republicans, but even the Democrats for political reasons, and the Democrats are supposed to be more progressive and more open toward, you know, being opposed to regime change. But the Republicans were really on Trump's case. But yesterday, something happened. There was a big shift, and you're going to tell the audience exactly what caused the shift to occur. But there was a big shift that we ended up seeing a lot of bipartisan breaking out. We see Graham talking to Pelosi. We're seeing bills introduced to the Congress by Republicans and Democrats, and people saying, well, this doesn't mean we like each other. But it was one of those things where bipartisanship was mandated. And I'd like to think that peace is bipartisan. And maybe they stopped and looked and said, maybe this was not such a dumb thing. Maybe this was a good thing to do instead of having some American soldiers getting slaughtered and expanding the war and making a commitment. And that was our argument yesterday, that the American people generally lean in that direction. So I think maybe on second thought, that is what happened. But there's probably a lot of other motivations. But see, in order to look like they're working with Republicans, they had to take a pause on impeachment. How can they be working with them and saying, well, we need to encourage you. Sanctions are good. We're going to support these bills. And yeah, we want to get rid of you tomorrow. You know, so it's a little bit confusing. But for Washington, not all that bad.
Yeah, and this is the thing that we both read the piece in The Hill this morning. Trump GOP tensions over Syria show signs of easing. And that's you know, the idea. You know, Graham has toned down a little bit from Trump has just committed the worst sin of ever, taking a couple dozen troops out of northern Syria. But unfortunately, that kind of good news, which is that the GOP is understanding the utility of this, has a little bit of bad news, Dr. Paul, and that's this. They all agree on the universal U.S. fallback. Okay, all right, Trump, but here's what we're going to do. Sanctions.
Yeah.
This is the thing. So Graham is introducing a new bill with Von Hollern, who's on the left of the Democratic Party. We talked about the Engel McCall sanctions in the House. Hard sanctions against Turkey. Sanction its energy sector. Sanction its military. Prohibit Turkish officials from coming to the United States. We're going to hit them hard. How dare they go into Syria uninvited? Well, I wonder who else is in Syria uninvited. I guess that's a different thing. But I think the question is, will these sanctions work on Turkey? And that might be something to think about.
Yeah, and sanctions aren't a very good method. How long we've been putting very, very severe sanctions on Iran, and they still hate us, you know.
Cuba.
they don't work. And so it is a fallacy. So in one sense, we say, yes, it's good because the troops are moving back. But it also emphasizes the point we've made for many years, and that is putting on sanctions and trying to hurt people because the leaders don't generally get hurt. You know, and the purpose of sanctions is to try to get the people to rebel against their government. No, you solidify power with the people. So, yes, it's the move is okay, but this whole idea that sanctions, just because they're bipartisan, there's a political thing going on there, but that doesn't solve the problem. Who knows where the next can of worms is going to come? And it looks like the Turks aren't going to get pushed around real easily. It seems like they might be willing to stand up, and they do have a few allies now. I mean, they've always been talking, of course, to Russia, which means that the alignment with Iran is going to be stronger. And there's every reason to believe that it may end up badly. But what we want to make the point is that people are coming together. They changed their mind. Yesterday they wanted, to condemn the president, for even backing off a little bit. But that sanctions are very bad. and sanctions are not the answer. Sanctions are done for one reason, regime change. The evil is us assuming that we know when to participate in regime change, that we are all brilliant about bringing people together because of American exceptionalism. And guess what? It hasn't worked all that well. American exceptionalism has to be the promotion of liberty and free markets and, you know, property. But that isn't the case. But the little bit of move in the right direction is okay. But the warning that I'd like to get out today is sanctions cannot be the answer. And we've made that point so often about the wars we were fighting in Congress, is some of our anti-war allies were always saying, well, we're against the war. We don't want to send troops, but we want to kill the children by starving them to death. Look at this thing. Well, Cuba and look at what, Iraq and all these things. Yeah. These are vicious acts of war that we would never put up with if they were levied against us.
Yeah, that's true. And I think the good news in this is, I think this is going to be different. I think we're going to see the end of sanctions as a U.S. foreign policy tool.
Right.
With this, I think they're biting off more than they can chew with Turkey. Could be wrong, but this is my sense. And here's sort of my exhibit A in my defense. There's a big U.S. delegation landing in Istanbul today. Trump said, hey, Pence, you go over there and deputize. You take care of this issue. You go, and he's bringing O'Brien, the National Security Advisor. He's bringing James Jeffrey, the Special Envoy. Huge delegation of U.S. And essentially what this is, the expectation on the part of the U.S. is we're going to send Pence over there. We're going to read Erdogan the Riot Act, and you listen up. You take those troops out of there. You do what we say, or you're going to be in big trouble. And guess what Erdogan said? No way. I'm not even going to meet with Pence. I'm not even going to talk to him. Trump, if you want to come over here and talk, let's talk. And so I think Turkey is emboldened. He's not, Erdogan is not cowering like the other countries that are subject to sanctions of the U.S. He's not cowering because he has an out. The U.S. is not a player in Syria as it thinks it should be. The Turks are now answering to the Russians who are in the buffer zone and who are much more in control and are actually trying to broker a deal between the Kurds, the Assad's army, and Turkey, trying to do something rather than just, sitting around. So essentially Trump said, quote, we'll be having very strong talks with a lot of people. Yeah, but not with Erdogan.
Right. You know, when you hear about the troops moving back and it looks like we're having a victory of sorts, generally, the victory only comes if we leave, you know, in a real sense of the word, that the military comes home, like, yeah, they said that we left Iraq too soon. Well, we never leave Iraq. You know, we have troops there. We have embassies there. We have the CIA in all these places. So it's still remote. So, yes, if we can pick away at it, they use the troops less. There are less body bags and less bombing and killing of our people. But it seems like we don't have to count the victims of all this. So if that's the case, the emphasis has to be on the fact that your suspicions are that these sanctions could backfire and make things much worse. And I would think that would be a natural consequence. And that the one thing is the success of them doing what we want and to really having a positive foreign policy with the generous use of sanctions, I think that is an illusion. I don't know when we can point to any time that has been successful to any major degree with putting on sanctions against our so-called enemies.
Yeah, and we already know that that Erdogan's not going to bow, because for the longest time, the whole negotiation between the U.S. and Turkey was, okay, guys, you can have your 5-kilometer buffer zone, but don't go any further than that. Erdogan says, forget you. We're going to go in and we're going to take what we want, what we think is necessary for our own security. And, you know, the U.S. is the one that's been bolstering the YPG, which is the Syrian arm of the PKK, which is a terrorist group. We know that. And Turkey has felt threatened because they've been for however many decades, since the 70s, struggling with PKK terrorism in Turkey that's killed tens of thousands of people. Not defending it, but this is a fact. They felt like they're acting in their own interest to go in and do this. The Graham von Hollern sanctions and the others, it's an idiotic response because, as we pointed out for 2 days now in a row, the situation is resolving itself. There's no wholesale slaughter of the Kurds. There are some unfortunate consequences, of course, of the incursion. It's never a pretty thing, and of course, we're not happy about it. But the slaughter is not there. The situation is resolving. The Kurds finally made a deal with Assad. And guess who was forbidding them? The Kurds have been wanting to talk to Assad for a long time. They were explicitly forbidden. This is a piece in Al Jazeera not long ago. Explicitly forbidden by John Bolton. Don't you dare go make a deal with Assad. We are going to cut all ties, and you're going to be out there for the slaughter. They wanted to make a deal because they understood that this is the inevitable consequence of what's happening, and he forbade it. So in a way, all the tears about the Kurds, we set them up for what's happening, but thankfully, the situation's resolving.
No matter what their intentions were, maybe there were some good intentions there, but it doesn't matter because the results are just so bad. And you know, there was a debate last night. I don't know if you watched or not.
No,
I didn't watch. I couldn't take it. Tried to read a little bit about it. But I think I know how the Democratic candidates line up on this issue. They're all radical progressives when it comes to taxation and a few other things. When it came to the old-fashioned progressive who was anti-war and would be against this policy of regime change, I don't think they had a serious debate last night.
Yeah.
And I gather that there were some comments levied at Tulsi.
Yeah.
Because she's clear on this. She says, what are you guys going to do about regime change? Do you support regime change? And I guess she didn't win a lot of influence with the other candidates, but she's the only one that says anything. So what a switch from, say, the 1960s when Democrats were identified with anti-war and progressivism and us staying out of these affairs.
Yeah.
But things have changed a lot over the last 30 or 40 years. It just seems like it's a political football. It's an economic football. It's military Keynesianism and, you know, the budget and all these things they interfere with. The basic principle followed, essentially by both parties, and that is of, unabashed pragmatism. Do whatever's necessary for the moment. Yesterday, we were going to string them up, but today, that's not such a bad idea, so we should change our tune. Well, this time it was okay, they did. But I think that will continue because they don't work from a basic assumption or a principle that they believe in, and that's why this interventionism is so evil and so flexible because, you know, parties can, if you endorse interventionism, you want to come across as being, a little bit opposed to it. Well, be opposed to this war, but for this war. Never on principle of when we should be involved. And that's why I don't think, if we have a serious debate with Trump and one of those progressives, I think that I certainly hope he did it before and it didn't hurt his campaign, will come out and defend, a non-interventionist foreign policy.
Yeah, and you may have seen this New York Times hit piece on Tulsi Gabbard recently. This is something out of Stalin era. You know, they said, she's an agent of Russia. What's her real game? What's she really up to? It's a classic thing out of the old denunciation show trial things. So it's incredible. But, you know, Warren and Tulsi went at it a little bit because Tulsi came out and said, I'm against all these regime change wars. It's doing no good. It's making things worse. What about you guys? And here's Elizabeth Warren, the great armchair general. Well, I think, you know, we shouldn't be involved in that, but Trump is wrong. He shouldn't take the troops out so fast. And here's something that I read, and I share it with you this morning, this great quote from Defense One, which, as far as I can see, really is a pretty objective source because it's just about military and military issues. And listen to this. Here's why Trump took the troops out like he did, which is now, leave. This is a quote from Defense One, I think yesterday or today. With Turkish forces moving south, Kurdish forces preparing their defenses, and Assad regime troops heading north and east, U.S. troops were stuck in an untenable situation with no option but to exfiltrate out of the kill zone. Indeed, it would have been a dereliction of duty had a numerically smaller U.S. force been ordered to stand their ground. I wonder if any of them understand that. These troops were caught between all of these armies. Their only purpose there was to keep the Turks away from the Kurds, which wasn't our mission. Oh, they should stay there and all be slaughtered.
Maybe there was one advisor or involved with the Democrats and others that pointed this out, you know, just a little bit of common sense, and that might have participated in why they have shifted, because it was so obviously a stupid thing, you know, to do, and they changed their mind and their tone.
I mean, hopefully that's the case, you know. And Schumer, if, you know, not to pour cold water on, he says, as soon as we get back in, we're going to pass a resolution condemning Trump for taking these troops out. Oh, yeah? Well, I hope someone points him out that these troops would have been killed if he hadn't done
that.
But I would close with a good piece I read this morning from our good friend David Stockman, who always throws out some real fastballs. And he had a good piece, and I encourage the whole piece. You can find it on Anti-War Today. But he makes a great point about NATO and the foolishness of NATO. And this is that, just listen to this. This is great Stockman. He's talking about how the last 24 hours or so, the whole predicate of NATO was slammed by the lunatic conflict of Washington's own making. And this has to do with Article 5, the mutual defense aspect of the NATO treaty. And here's Stockman. So had Turkey invoked Article 5, Washington would have been obliged to join its Turkish and Free Syrian Army allies in attacking its Kurdish SDF allies. Or in the alternative, had Washington invoked Article 5, presumably Turkey would have been obliged to make war on itself. There's NATO. There's NATO in a nutshell.
That's a pretty good argument for staying out of entangling alliances. Now, that's a little bit entangled. Okay, very good, Daniel. And I'm going to close just by emphasizing, you know, the value of non-interventionism, as I always do, because that does answer a lot of these questions. Would have prevented problems like this and would move us in the right direction. I'm still hoping we're going in this direction. But I'm going to close out today a little bit differently, because I'm going to invite you to watch our program tomorrow, because it is unusual to have this guest on the program, but my son Rand Paul will be on the program tomorrow. He's been on a couple times, but it's been a while, and I thought that maybe we could get him on and have him talk about his book. He has a book on socialism. He deals with the fact that there's a lot of socialists running these days, and I hope to get the definition of socialism and everything else out there on the table. And one thing I know is that when somebody comes on for a book interview, I think we're allowed to ask him some other question. But that'll be live streamed at our usual time, 11 Central. So please turn in tomorrow for that special interview with Rand Paul. I want to thank everybody for listening today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.